The brahmacharis would be looked after by the grihastas. The grihastas actually would look after the three other ashrams, vanaprasas, sannyasis, and the brahmacharis. And this is the way that the system went on very nicely. But in this age of Kali, we see that the grihastas, if you look on, what is that, GoFundMe, a lot of it's grihastas who can't afford their medical bills, or they're needing some help to do something that really should be, they should be able to do without any help. You know, and then we see, you know, I don't know about the brahmacharis, because the brahmachari we have here looks very paka, so I'm not sure about the cleanliness, but in general, he's speaking of the young men that are in the colleges and universities. But, you know, they're renowned. I know when I was a brahmachari, the brahmacharis were renowned that their ashrams were always Gucci, and the temple president would always be getting on their case. So we're having a clean up today. So, you know, there's that. And then you have the sannyasis who, the vanaprasas, who live in villages. No longer do they go off on pilgrimage, or do they, you know, go to the forest to, you know, visit holy places. But they are living in villages. I mean, I can say I'm probably one. We live here. I mean, kind of on a farm, but still. You know, it just isn't anymore that the vanaprasas go away. And then the sannyasis. You know, how do the sannyasis, they're still living, they're being looked after very nicely. You know, not all, but the austerity has kind of disappeared a little bit here and there. Sorry, I don't want to be offensive. But it is like that. Sometimes you see that the sannyasis are living much more opulently than most grihastas could ever afford. So in this age of Kali Yuga, things are just so topsy-turvy. They're not how in the earlier part of the Srimad Bhagavatam, when it's being described all the different ashrams and varnas and how they should be done. That's gone now. Because no longer is the varnashram dharma system being followed. And I think if you look in Srila Prabhupada's seven, when he was incorporating this movement in New York, I think this was 65. He had seven purposes that he put down in this incorporation papers. And one of them was to show a simple way of life and to have the members of the society live together very simply, to show a path of Krishna consciousness. So I think that is something I know for myself. It's missing. You know, I can see that my life is not as simple as maybe, but the simpler we get, like when we used to all live together in the ashrams, and it was difficult, but it was so blissful. You know, everyone was associating with everyone. Everyone would go, oh, it's the marathon. Everybody would be going, or someone would follow, cover people's services. And it was just so coherent and, you know, just easy to be Krishna conscious. Now we're all living kind of separated. We're all having to make a living to cover our expenses. We're having to buy foodstuffs and, you know, from the Publix or wherever, you know, paying a lot of money for foodstuffs that really we could grow ourselves. And because of this, our lifestyles have changed so much that this varnashram, it just becomes natural that these things happen, that vanaprasas live in the villages, that grihastas start begging. So we're seeing here how degraded this age will become more and more. as the years go by, more and more, more and more. And the only panacea for this age is that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came here, and he gave us this chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, so that in other ages, there were different ways to get perfection, in each age. But we cannot do these things anymore. When is it in the Satya Yuga, who was performing sacrifice?
No. Satya Yuga, they were
meditation. Oh, meditation.
Go ahead. Do you know all of them?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So as I was saying before Dad interrupted me in an unintentionally kind of manner, Satya Yuga was the Yuga Dharma for that was yogic meditation.
Uh-huh.
Treta Yuga it was Vedic fire sacrifices, and then in Dwarpa Yuga it was deity worship, mm-hmm. and for this one, Kali Yuga, it's the chanting of the names.
Thank you. That's very good. So in all these different ages, we have these different, but who could perform this meditation, this yogic meditation? Who could sit in a cave? Now, we can't sit, myself, I can't sit for 10 minutes without getting up and doing something. It's very difficult. Meditating on the holy name in the morning is a chore to get my mind to stop and to listen. So that would be out of the question. And big fire sacrifices. You know, when Arjuna and the Pandavas went out to collect wealth for Maharaj Yudhisthira, they found, was it Arjuna? Yeah, he found a huge place where a Vedic sacrifice had been performed. And it was all gold, gold trays, gold utensils, all this gold there. So they had so much wealth. But we wear plastic bangles and, we don't even have the wealth. What to speak of having gold plates? Who has that? So it's all rolled gold or silver. Not so we could not perform those sacrifices. And deity worship? I mean, Srila Prabhupada gave us deity worship and it's in our line. But really, one time I went on in Jagannath Puri, Indrajumna Swami was going around to the different holy places in Jagannath Puri, so we went. And we stopped at one of the ashrams where one of Narottam Das's deities were there and being worshipped. And so Maharaj was asking him about the deity worship. He said, "No more gopis." He said, "No more gopis?" He said, "Yes, hard to find any gopis." And then Maharaj said, "What do you mean?" He said, "No one can serve the Lord like the gopis." So that is deity worship. We're serving Krishna, not that this is, I did this. This makes me, I'm going to show everybody how wonderful I am. No, it's all for the Lord's pleasure. But where do we find these gopis, as he said? And then now, it's so simple. Just the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And even then, we have difficulties, right? But so sublime, this chanting of the Hare Krishna Mantra. So this age of Kali Yuga, even though we have so many faults, and we could find faults forever in ourselves as well as others, so much cheating. I remember when I first started kind of going around looking what is there in spiritual life I was interested in. Pundarik and somebody else and I went hitchhiking around looking at different places, right? The old Pundarik. And we checked out the macrobiotic situation, Guru Maharaji, And we had heard about Srila Prabhupada before that. I'd read BTG, we'd gone to the temple. So I was comparing, every time I went somewhere, I was comparing. How does this compare to Srila Prabhupada? That one's no good. We went to this Kundalini yoga, and they were all sitting, I was thinking, what's going on? What's happening here? It was so strange, and then I had to get up and leave. I was like, no, strike that one off also. And in the end, the only one that really I could see was truly, really compassionate and not interested in the women or the money or, you know, was Srila Prabhupada in the ISKCON movement. There was just no question. You know, all of the Lakshmi that was given, he could have been so wealthy if he had just kept all the money himself. But he said a Brahmana gets millions of dollars in the morning, and in the evening, he's poor, right? He just spends. So one time I was at the airport, and Srila Prabhupada was there, and someone came and gave him a really nice, expensive Rolex watch, right? And Srila Prabhupada took off his watch, put that one on, and gave the man, and he had an expensive watch that someone else had given him. And I saw that a few times. He wouldn't think, well, how much is that one compared to this one? Or, you know, there was no question of he was just accepting our service. And it was such an eye-opener that it wasn't a question of dollars and cents, you know, what, like, even at the end, Srila Prabhupada, he was in Vrindavan, and Mukunda Maharaj, he wasn't Maharaj then, he went from the manor. And when he came back, he had a ring, a gold ring, and I can't remember what, sapphires or something in it, that someone had given Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada gave it to Mukunda Maharaj, said, give this to George Harrison. To George Harrison. You know, and I remember when Mukunda Maharaj gave it to him, he said, I don't wear jewelry, but this I will wear. I will put on a chain and wear around my neck. He said, this is priceless. And I think that, you know, that seeing that showed me that Srila Prabhupada was very different from your modern yogis or your modern, you know, even in the Catholic Church. I was raised as a Catholic. And there was so much pomp and ceremony. And, you know, they had so much wealth, the church. And the people there, I remember they would call and say, you know, don't forget to bring your one of those little, your money every Sunday that you put in the little basket. Or, you know, and they would be very keen on that. But, like, when my mother died, my father was wanting someone from the church to help him, you know, because it was very difficult for him. They'd been married for so many years, and no one came, no one bothered. My father said, yes, they are so wealthy on our backs. We are working so hard to give donations. And yet, when we're in need of some spiritual guidance, they're nowhere to be found. And that is kind of what it's like in the world now, as far as our spiritual guides in different places. I'm not saying in our movement, but, you know, so we don't want to become like that in our ISKCON. We're wanting to somehow keep that austerity. I was thinking, austerity is such an important part of life. You know, it's so easy to slip out. I'm number one offender of not being austere. You know, I like nice facade. But that austerity, like when Sanatan Goswami came to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, immediately, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu looked kind of unpleased towards the chadar that he had on. And Sanatan Goswami went away, and he was thinking, he was looking like he was not pleased with me. So he went out to the marketplace, and he found a beggar, and he said, would you trade me your worn blanket for mine, new one? He said, don't tease me. I am poor man, but you don't have to. He said, no, no, I really mean I want to trade you. And when he came back, he saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so pleased with that austerity. And austerity is considered the wealth of the brahmanas. It's a very important practice for all of us to keep ourselves simple and austere. You know, and it feels good too. And it makes things very easy. You know, spiritual life easy, you're strong. You know, as soon as it used to be that everyone would go to every program. And as soon as the internet or the TV started slipping into our homes, or then we're up late, or we're, you know, so many other things to do besides our spiritual practices. I'm not saying you all, but it does happen. And, you know, it just imperceptibly, we slip away from what we're really doing. And then we get to the point of we're still thinking we're young when we're old. You know, what do they say? Old people who look at someone the same age as them think, whew, they look really old, but I'm still looking young. You know, we're still thinking, we're not seeing how time is ticking imperceptibly. We're getting older and older. Our hair is going gray. Our teeth are falling out. Things are hurting here and there. You know, we're forgetting so easily things. You know, and this is the time we should have already practiced up till this time, spiritual life. And now we're polishing off. We're giving up just the running of our daily treadmill existence. Now we have to get off the treadmill and start really concentrating on our spiritual life. Because before we know it, we're gone. This body is finished. I myself see, it could be any time. My mother died at 50 years old. You know, there's people dying at 3, 4. You know, so we're lucky we've been able to practice this long and keep up our spiritual practices. And it gives us a good foundation for getting back to Godhead. But we're on our last lap. What do they say when people are running marathons? They kind of pace themselves. And then at the very end, don't they step on the speed and go faster? So at the end, we have to do like that. You know, we don't want to be still greedy for wealth and money when we're old and supposed to be renounced. You know, we don't want to just live our everyday daily life like we've always lived, even when we're supposed to be getting away from that. We have to make plans how we can do that, how we can actually insert more Krishna consciousness into our lives. And more reading, more chanting, you know, more associating with devotees to find out what they're doing to increase their spiritual life. More going out on book distribution, preaching to others. There's so many ways, more deity worship, more taking service, because at some point, we're not going to be able to do any of that. I know a couple days ago, I got some flu or something. I don't know what it was, but suddenly my leg, I couldn't stand on it. It was so painful. It was like, and I was thinking, is this it? Am I just not going to be able to walk anymore? And then, you know, life is just so short. We think it's just forever we're going to be the same, and we kind of feel the same, but we don't look the same, nor is our body working the same. You know, so those are, what did Prabhupada say, 40 years old is preliminary old age. Okay, so now we're in, well, not everybody, but some of us are in our 60s, 50s. We're past the preliminary point, and we're looking at the end, you know, the finish line. So with our last time that we have here, we have to spend this in trying to make our plans to execute our spiritual life and become more and more, not sincere, but more focused on our spiritual life, giving up the material side as much as possible, so that at the time of death, it will just be natural, immediately chanting, giving up the body. In India, I remember one other time we were going on, I think it was the Navadvip Mayapur Parikram, and there was this old man laying on this, you know, those cots under a tree, and he was just laying there. And when we came by on Sangirtan, the residents of the household came out and gave fruit and offered. And someone asked, "Oh, this is your father?" I said, "Yes, he is going to be dying just now." Now, he wasn't doing any, you know, he wasn't like in a hospital. He said he just decided this is the time. And he went out and he's been reading and he chants and he just lays down waiting and he'll die. He wasn't thinking, "Oh my God, I'm going to die. What am I going to do?" You know, it's just part of life. Birth, death, old age, disease. It's part of life. And for some reason, we like the youth part is quite nice. But especially in this society now, youth is everything. And here he's explaining in the poor part how they put old people in these old communities, old people's homes or whatever, and just forget about, and they're trying to enjoy still, but not possible. But it's not, that isn't the way to finish life. And this comes about due to this youth, everybody wanting this youth. You know, and youth is the most important. No question of the wisdom that older people have. It's not so important anymore. It's youth. You know, they want youthful people giving the news reports, or youthful people, they're asking, "What's your opinion on this?" What's old people, put them away somewhere and just forget about it. We don't need to take care of them. They're too expensive. When my mother, mother-in-law was in the old people's home, you know, it was a hospice kind of, but in London, and I went and stayed with her for a few weeks, and I would stay in her house and then go to stay with her all day. And I said to her, "Why don't you want to go out and be with everyone in this?" She said, "Oh, they're all old people. I don't want to talk to them. I don't want to be around them. They're just old." And I'm going, now she's 97, and I said, "Well,
that's very
ages." Yes, it is. But, you know, she was old, but she was thinking, "Oh, I don't want..." But everyone else was out there having, you know, their sing-alongs and doing whatever they do. And but she said to me, "No, I'd rather just stay here and you keep meditating and I'll sit here and listen." So she was just satisfied, just sitting there, and I would chant my japa and we'd do a little sing, and she was fine just... At one point, she says, "What's an analogy?" I don't know why this came up in her mind. "What's an analogy?" I said, "Well, it's like, you know, explaining something that's unexplainable, but using another..." And I can't remember which one I gave her. But she was so appreciative. "Oh, yes, that's nice." You know, and I thought, we're so fortunate that we know what to do at the time of death. We know where we're going. We know what nobody else knows. Like she said, should I do some of this meditating? I said, "Yes." I said, "Actually," she said, I have a hard time remembering the whole mantra. I said, "No, no. Whenever you're scared or something, just call out Krishna." She said, "Krishna?" I said, "Yeah, just say Krishna. Don't worry about the rest. Just say like that. And I think it helped to make her feel better. And so many devotees, their parents at the time of death, they'll be there and help them to remember their ultimate goal. Because everywhere else, they're telling us that enjoyment is the ultimate goal of life. You know, we have to enjoy. So then when we start getting old and all, we think that's what we have to keep doing. We don't know any other way. And I was thinking, even in our movement, the Vanaprastha stage of life? We've never seen it. You know, who's ever seen it? You know, Brahmachari life, really in the West, we were the guinea pigs for that and to start this movement. Until we started going to India, we never really saw that. Srila Prabhupada set that up for us. And then the Grihastha life, I know for Dhananjaya, Srila Prabhupada said, okay, now you get these Gorni Thai deities and you get them molded in Vrindavan, and then you sell them, and then you can make some money to maintain your household. You know, so he was, we should maintain our household. But then at Vanaprastha time, it's time to, but we never learned that. So now we're all kind of trying to figure out what to do. And sannyas and guru, we only saw Srila Prabhupada. You know, how he did. So there's like imitation of that. But so we're kind of scratching in the dark or trying to find our way with these different ashrams. But I think on the whole, our society is doing pretty well as far as, you know, we have brahmacharis, we have grihasthas that are maintaining families. Like the school down here is so wonderful. When you see the wonderful students that are there and the wonderful students who have gone on to further their education and some that are becoming married and taking up grihastha life and having children that they're putting in the school. The teachers, I think practically all of them are second generation students themselves that have now become the teachers. And it's very, especially in this place, New Ramanreti, this dam, you can see, because we have such a huge community, you can see that it's going on to a certain extent. But I think this Varnashram system, yesterday, didn't Shesha Prabhu mention that it's an important part of our society, because that is society, the Varnashram system. And Srila Prabhupada himself, when he came to the manor the last time, that was in 1977, must have been August or September, because he had his Vyas Puja ceremony there. He was going on to go to Gita Nagari to show us how to live simply. You know, how to live simply and Krishna conscious, and how to reinstate this Varnashram system. But of course we know he became so ill. And he said, no, I want to go back to India. I think the time is now. So he went back without coming to the United States. But his idea was to train us, you know, how to live a simple life. Because you see, the more we're rushing around, the less time we have to spend on spiritual, and it might seem like it's spiritual things that we're doing in some ways, but are we really having time to search and to actually understand what we're reading, what we're imbibing? You know, are we really getting down to the basis of our spiritual life? Or is it just like keeping busy to keep busy and not really understanding? I was just yesterday, I think someone had written that they were talking about themselves, and they were saying how they worship at the Radharamanji temple, one of the Goswamis, a young one. And he was saying he just started realizing about pratishtha, about that, having, thinking that we're great, right? That false ego that all of us have. Well, I don't know all of you, but I have big time. And he was saying how even things like you're ill, you could say, well, I was sicker than you were. Have you ever heard someone, I was really sick, you don't know how sick I was. Even that, we'll find a way to be better than someone else, to be proud of something. You know, and it can come in so many different ways that we're not even noticing. You know, we might think that say, dressing the Lord. You know, we're doing that, and we want to do that in a way just to please the Lord. But are we afterwards thinking, I'm so good at this? Actually, I'm better at this than... Are we ourselves thinking that we're the doers doing this? Or are we actually doing it simply as the servant of the Lord and just doing the best we can by His mercy? Because really, if you think about it, there's nothing we can do without the Lord's mercy. And actually, Srila Prabhupada said that is the true meaning of humility. It's not our cars, our bank accounts, our spouses, our children, our learning, all of these things that will save us at the time of death. These things are not going to be saving us, right? But those are things that we are proud of, that we're thinking, you know, I'm really taking care of this. It's only when we realize none of that can save us. Only the mercy of the Supreme Lord, only our Guru and the Supreme Lord can actually save us. And we are useless without that. Totally useless. Now, what can we do? We're like the firefly trying to be like the sun. You know, we have no potency. But we're empowered by the Supreme Lord to do things, you know, for His pleasure. So that's the real humility. And that's when we can actually serve the Supreme Lord. And that's when we can actually live simply. Even if we're doing work, we're working, taking care of a family, whatever we do, milking cows, driving taxis, working at Lowe's, whatever it is we have to do, selling houses, being a doctor, being a mother and raising children and housewife, whatever it is we have to do, we have to keep that simplicity to really imbibe this Krishna consciousness. And that will show at the time of death, without a doubt. You know, that chanting of the holy name, that will show. And we will go back to Godhead, not come back here for the end of Kali Yuga. I think that could be really... It's bad now, but it's getting worse. It's not going to be a pretty sight. So we want to get out of here as soon as possible. And the way to that is the Hare Krishna mantra. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Does anyone have anything they'd like to say? Pani Bhushan Prabhu?
All right.
You next.
As simple as it is presented, very poignant point says that old people, you know, they end up isolated. Mm-hmm. When in Varna and Ashram, it's like, call it village or tribe, and just by their age, they're usually held in esteem, mm-hmm. and they fit very well with children. Mm-hmm. They have very similar diets and similar habits, so that there's a function for them. But now there's separation, and the children go to daycare, and the old people go to the retirement community to redeem their youth. That was one point. Another was about prosperity in the Vedas is based on a market of charity. As you pointed out, the qualification of the brahmana is to receive, but he's not fully qualified unless he gives liberally, and that sets an example for everyone. Mm-hmm. So as opposed to hoarding and keeping and amounting wealth and saying that's prosperity, the prosperity is the flow of wealth, mm-hmm. constantly flowing in the direction of need, and yes. The need is recognized by the intellectual class and executed by everyone else. There are other points, but that's sufficient.
Yeah, it's a perfect system when you need. Thank you. No, Tom.
Can you explain at least one of the points that you made in your lecture. I wasn't able to catch them because I was busy making those little illustrations that Dad wrote the text for.
Mm-hmm. So which one?
Like, just any. Like because I wasn't able to catch any of the last parts you said, just within the last parts.
Yes, depending on Krishna and Guru. And that can save us at the time of death. Simplifying our life. Mantra, chanting the Hare Krishna mantra.
Oh, well, that wasn't it. Like, I had a question about old age, uh-huh. and you know how you said that even though this body might be temporary, even though this body might be temporary and we're getting old, yet we think we're young, mm-hmm. like, and we think we might live forever, like. I was, you know, right when you explained that, I was recalling hearing about this jellyfish, which is able to turn itself back into 1 year old and start its whole life all over again, making it to seem like it's not going to be able to die any moment.
Mm-hmm. But they die, right? They must die, but they must die because everything in this world dies. It's called Mrityalok, place of death. So actually people do that. They go and they get facelifts and this lift and that smoosh and try to look young still. Yeah, new organs. They also try to be young. Thank you.
I just want to share a couple of things. You were talking about, you know, student life and how it's kind of all messed up in today's society. So I ran across this one statement that college is a fountain of knowledge where students gather to drink. College is a fountain of knowledge where students gather to drink.
Yeah, isn't that true?
Yeah. Also, you know, you were talking about the wealth that what, you know, people had in the ancient time, per se.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much, but yet they weren't attached to it. So there was this one pastime, which probably some of us know, with a disciple of Arjun, Yamunacharya. Yamunacharya is one of our acharyas. So he had, in his ashram, he had a temple president who was a grihastha. Temperance and his wife, and one of the inmates of the ashram was a brahmachari. So one day this brahmachari, you know, told his guru Maharaj, Yamunacharya, that he wants to leave the ashram because it's too much attachment here, that he wants to be, like, renounced. So he asked why. So he said even the temple president, you know, he has, that he's, you know, he's a grihastha, and his wife has, you know, is dressing all the fancy jewelries and so forth, and that is too much of a maya if he wants to get out of it. So he said, okay, before you go, I would like you to do something for me. So in those days, people's homes, they weren't like all locked up, even that some of them don't even have windows. So he said, I want you to go to this grihastha house tonight and try to steal the Mataji's bangles, all her fancy gold bangles, and just try to observe what's happening. So he went there, and he saw she was sleeping, so he crawled through the window, and he tried to steal her bangles. So then, as soon as he pulled one or two off, she turned. So he got scared, and he ran out, he jumped back through the window. And he was listening, so she went over to the room. She woke her husband up and said, something is wrong in the temple. That lachmi is probably short, so your husband asks, what's wrong with you? In the middle of the night, you're bringing this question, is something wrong with you? He said, no, that this brahmachari came to steal my bangles, so I torn so he can get the other hand to pull it off to the rest, because I'm pretty sure that he would only take wealth to use for the temple, but he got scared and ran away. So when he reported that back to his Guru Maharaj, then Guru Maharaj said, do you understand? He said, yes, now you understand that with all they have this wealth, they're not attached to it, they're willing to use everything in Krishna's service.
Yeah.
So I was just thinking, like, even when I grew up, like, my mom had so much gold that when she dresses, I can't see her neck. Many times I ask her, where did your neck and your chest go? Because of so much gold all over.
Mm-hmm.
But still, we put it in very simple places. Nowadays, at least in America, you have people try to have us, you know, fancy homes. And especially Asian folks. They have so much wealth, but look on their bodies, you're not seeing a piece of jewelry, not an earring or a ring or nothing like that. So it looks like they transfer that attachment or that wealth in buildings and roads and highways instead of, you know, the way the culture used to do.
Instead of real wealth, land and cows.
Yeah, definitely.
Hey, sometimes I wonder, you know, how much culture in, let's say, South America or India actually is idealizing Vedic culture, you know, in its full mature form. I mean, we, you know, like 50, 100 years ago, there's things that we can learn from, you know, the past, but you're already like 5,000 years into, okay, you're 4,950 years into Kali Yuga, as compared to 4,000, you know, 5,000 years. You know, when it's not, I, you know, there might be something to consider. When we're looking back 100 years, 200 years, we're still very much deep into Kali Yuga. But you're talking about old people and how your mother wasn't into old people. She's an old person. Maybe she's a smart old people, because all those other old people sitting around singing, you know, row, row, row your boat. I mean, you know, and you wonder why people don't listen to old people.
Yeah.
They're just trying to act like, you know, kids in kindergarten. So, you know, there's nothing worse than hanging around the old people, because the benefit of the human form of life is you accumulate that wisdom, that realization, like you talked about. And if they haven't done that, it's a waste.
Yeah.
You know, and what kind of advice are they going to give you just to be an old person like me? You know, and they want to suck your energy. You know, there's almost, this is generalizations, there's almost an envy of the young. It's almost a sign of intelligence not to go to a person like that for advice, because they don't have any advice if they've just lived their life materialistically. Whereas your mother, you know, I mean, if they actually become, my experience working with young adults is if you have something to say, they want to hear it, because they're trying to figure out life, they're moving forward, it's a grand mystery. And if you have some advice that's practical they can use, they want to hear it.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Actually, because that was in London, there was a lot of people in there, because sometimes I'd have to sit in the day room waiting for them to do something to my mom. And they were people that were brought up in India from the Raj. They were there with their fathers were in the military or whatever, viceroy of some. And they had a wealth of knowledge about India and about... And they would listen, actually, when you talk to them about Vaishnavism, because they had some understanding of the culture there, which was nice. And I was thinking also, when you were talking, that there was... you know that one devotee who she used to... There's a famous picture of her wearing those big headphones doing the... composing. What was her name? Do you remember, Ragatmika? Because, yeah, she was in Boston, and Niranjan Swami went to see her, and he said that she couldn't remember anything. She totally had lost all memory, and her family had taken her and put her in this old folks' home. And so he went to see her, but she didn't make much sense. She couldn't remember much at all. And they said, well, we'll be back to see you again. They left prasad and all. And when they went out, the nurses said, oh, we love Isha. She's amazing. Said, when we have sing song, and she always leads. And she gets everyone to chant Hare Krishna. That was the only thing she could remember. And she would sing the Maha Mantra and get all of them to sing along with her. And she said that's what she remembered. And that's what she keeps doing all the time. And he thought, this is so amazing. So then they went back to visit her, and they asked her if she would chant. And she started chanting the Maha Mantra. And so that's all we really need to get in there. Even if we lose everything, if that's there, you know. We could. Anyone else? All right, Bo. Keshava, Burma.
You were talking about how important it is to, you know, follow the ashrams, and especially in old age that we, our life becomes more simple. But then while you were explaining, I was thinking that, first of all, it's really complicated to, like, make out what are the ashrams to really follow. And we see from Prabhupada's life, from his instructions, that his life, and he wanted actually everybody's lives to be set around preaching and to give Krishna consciousness to others. And I was thinking, like your own husband, for example, he goes out every day. He might not maybe have the ideal vanaprastha life, but he goes out every day, he tries to make others Krishna conscious. So if we, that's what I feel, if we center our life around doing that, automatically, our life has to be more simple and has to be more austere, because how will you preach if you're not simple and austere? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's true. There was something I was thinking about when you said, and I forgot what it was. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.